Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is testing and debugging components in WebSphere Integration Developer version 6.2. Today's presenter is Paul Goodraham. Paul has been a Level 2 Software Support Engineer for WebSphere Integration Developer since 2009. His job role is to assist users with WebSphere Integration Developer. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Paul.
Hello, this is Paul Goodraham here. Today I'd like to talk to you about the WebSphere Integration Developer component test client and the debugger. Joseph, can we move to slide 2? Thank you. The topic that I'm going to focus on is WID version 6.2. The information that I give should also work on any other version of WID. I'm going to present more on the intermediate level of topics for the component test client and the debugger. So I'll be glossing over the more simple aspects of these components. And I'm hoping that you'll learn something from this talk so that you can increase your productivity. We use the component test client to test the components on the server, and you can do that without needing a lot of external resources. So if you have web services that you will rely on in your production, you don't necessarily need them to test when you're using the test client. So to do that, we can create emulators to test to emulate those components that you don't have ready to go. You can also test multiple components in your assembly diagram by using emulators to emulate, the ones that you don't have. You can also use the debugger when you're using the component test client, or when you're doing your regular testing. You can control the execution of your program so that you can see where your program is going, and you can examine the data, and then you can find out what is going wrong. You can also look at the data and see which parts of the message are getting through. So Joseph, can we move to slide 3? So using the component test client, you can set up your environment to test the component, the ones that you're developing. The component test client will display a screen that will allow you to enter the data that you'll need to test your component. It will take that data and create a message and send that to the component, and then on the server it will run so that you can see how your code is going to run. The component test client can also start the server, and if the projects aren't deployed, then it can deploy them as well. The component test client actually monitors all the communications between the components and by watching the messages on the server. And so that's why it can capture the data and display it just like it is on the server. It even has a fine-grained trace capability where it can watch the message moving through the application, and it can display some of the details that you might see if you were running the debugger. So in that case, it has some similarities to the debugger. So the events that are happening in the component test client will appear in the events panel. That's one of the portions of the user interface of the test client. Joseph, can you move to the next slide, please? Here on slide 4, we will look at how to test just one component that is sitting in your assembly diagram. You can bring up the test client using the context menu. When you right-click or use the menu button in the assembly diagram, then in the context menu, there will be two entries. One is test component, and one is test component in isolation. When you use test component, it will bring up the user interface where you can enter the data for a message. And it will send that message to your component, and then execution will continue, and the component will call its partners, like other web services. And so it's basically a full test of your application starting at that component. If you use test component in isolation, then the test client will create emulators for the partners that your component is calling. And so the test client will give you a user interface so that you can type the response that that web service would have given. So in that case, you're only testing the one component that you clicked on, that you've right-clicked on. Joseph, can we move to slide 5, please? Here's the example that I'll be working with today. In this sample, we have an export which simply takes a string, and we have two business processes, and the second business process calls a Java component. And using this example, we'll be able to test just one component or test the component as it calls other components. Joseph, can we move to slide 6, please? After using the test in isolation menu item, the user interface, here we see the user interface for the component test client. And you can see I've selected the configurations tab at the bottom so that you can see how the program has automatically configured some emulators. In this case, I've decided to test the business process component 2. And when I say test in isolation, then we've created the test client has automatically created emulators for business process component 1 and for Java component. Joseph, can we move to slide 7, please? In this example, I'm going to discuss testing two components at once. So instead of testing in isolation, we're going to test several components. To do that, we'll need to emulate components that we don't want to call, and just so that we can just run the components that we know are working that we want to focus on. So perhaps we're testing the interface between those two components, and we may not want to test a Java component. Maybe it has an exception or something, and we don't want those exceptions to interrupt our testing. So, Joseph, can we move to slide 8, please? In this slide, we see how to create an emulator using the menus in the test client. I've selected the configurations tab again and right-clicked on the component and reference emulators so that I can add one. Right, Joseph, can we move to slide 9, please? When we create a new emulator using that add menu, then this widget pops up, and we can use this to set up a new emulator. So here we click on components in the emulator portion of this wizard, and in the next portion, I've selected Java components. That's the name of my component that's implemented in Java, but I don't want it to run. So we're going to create an emulator so that it doesn't run. And then when we click Finish, then that emulator will be created in this instance of the component test client. Joseph, can we move to slide 10, please? So this is what happens when we start running the test that we were just creating. As you can see in the events portion of the UI, we've been running business process component 1, and it's called business process component 2. And when business process component 2 calls the Java component, then this UI shows up, and it allows us to enter the response that the Java component would have given. And there are two strings required for the response, and so this UI allows us to enter those strings. The data that we enter here will then be put into system message, and that message will be sent back to business process component 2 as the response from this Java. This UI also allows you to inspect the data that was sent from business process component 2 as the caller, and you may want to use that knowledge to type the response that Java component would have given. Okay, Joseph, can we go to slide 11, please? In some cases, your application might have very large messages with a lot of fields full of data, and many industrial applications or non-trivial applications that the customers use will have pretty large messages with lots of information. So in the test client, there is a UI where you can type the information for each field and to give you that control. However, you might find that that becomes tiresome after many repetitions of entering this message. Or you also might have a message that you've created with the text editor and you want to use that message. So if you've entered the data in the component test client UI, you can save that information to a file, and it will be stored in an XML file, and you can use that XML file as input to the test client. And in the same way, if you've already created a message in an XML file, you can read that XML file into the test client so that you don't have to enter the same large amount of data each time. Joseph, can you move to slide 12, please? So to read a message from a file, here's the UI in the component test client. You can right-click pretty much anywhere in the UI where you enter data, and then use the menu item Import from File. And that will bring up a file selection dialog, and you can navigate where your data is on your file system, and click on the XML file, and the information will be read from that XML file and will appear in the component test client UI in the value editor. Move to slide 13, please. Now I'd like to talk about the WID debugger. The debugger provides all the usual features that you would need to debug an application program. You can set a breakpoint to pause the execution. You can click on the step over button in order to step from one execution point to the next. And you can examine the data that's being passed from one step of your program to the next using the variables view. And you can also modify that data in case there's some data error and you want to proceed with a normal execution. You can repair the problem. Or you can also change the data to something else to cause your program to run a path that normally wouldn't be run. So you can use that to test an error path, for instance, without having to trigger an error in one of your other components. One thing you might know is that to use the WID debugger, you have to start the server in debug mode. In previous versions of WebSphere, running the server in debug mode could make it quite a bit slower. However, in more recent versions, the debug mode has been improved, and it is a little bit slower than run mode, but it's not very much slower. It's only a little bit slower. So don't let the performance scare you off. It runs pretty well in debug mode. Joseph, can we go to slide 14, please? To use the debugger, you have to create breakpoints. So you can do that from the debug menu in most of the sort of programming languages that WIDS supports. So when you right-click on a node in your program, the debug menu will come up, and you can add and remove breakpoints. So in this sample, we see a BPEL program, and we right-click, and the debug menu is right at the very bottom. And when you bring up the debug submenu, you can add and remove entry and exit breakpoints, and you can also disable and enable breakpoints that already exist. You can use the debugger for business processes, for mediations, business object maps, XML maps, business rules, and business state machines. You should be careful. Some people have actually had trouble finding the debug menu, and it appears in different places in the context menu in the different program editors. So in this case, in BPEL, this is the hardest to find because it's at the bottom of a very long menu. And in the mediation menu, the debug menu appears somewhere in the middle. So anyway, you might have to look carefully to find it. So setting a breakpoint can be helpful when your application is running and you have an exception. Sometimes it can be difficult to track down where that exception is coming from. And so if you set a breakpoint, say at the beginning and at the end of your program, then you can, when you run your application and it stops at a breakpoint at the beginning, you can check the log and see if there was an exception before your application even ran, in which case it would be in that exception is probably happening in a server somewhere, server code before your application is called. And if you have another breakpoint at the end of your program, then you can check the log again and see if there's an exception. And then if there's a new exception, you'll know that the exception happened in your program and not somewhere else in the server code after your program is completed. Hey, Joseph, can we go to slide 15, please? When you create a breakpoint, this blue icon appears in your program. But the breakpoint may not be sent to the server right away. For instance, if the server isn't running, then the blue circle will appear. But once the server is running, the breakpoint will be installed on the server. And when the breakpoint is installed, this check mark appears next to the breakpoint. Well, the project has to be deployed on the server, and the server is running in debug mode. And the WID debugger has to be connected to the server, which it does automatically. This says Java code creates a special case. The breakpoint won't be installed in Java code. It won't appear installed on Java code with that check mark until the class has been loaded in the JVM in the WebSphere server. So it will definitely be loaded after your application has been run once. But if you haven't run the application yet, then the breakpoint will appear as a blue circle, but the checkpoint won't appear. The breakpoint will still fire because once your application starts running and it loads the class, the JVM does have the Java breakpoint notified, loaded, and it will enable the breakpoint and install it once the class is loaded. So it's great to check this check mark went to see if your breakpoint is installed, but you'll have to be careful with Java breakpoints because they're a bit of a special case. Joseph, can we move to slide 16, please? So once your application starts running, either through using the test client or some other testing technique like using JSP or something, when the breakpoint pops, it will appear as an orange circle. So execution will stop in your application, and the debug perspective will open. Normally, there will be a dialog that pops up that asks if you want to open the debug perspective. But sometimes, if you check, "Don't show me this again," then the debug perspective will open automatically. You don't have to open the debug perspective, but it is recommended so that you can see the breakpoints view and the variables view, which will be helpful in your debugging. In this example of a BPEL program, and set a breakpoint on the entry breakpoint on the first node of the program, which is a receive. When you run this, you'll find that the input variables still are not set. The input variable for the receive will be set once the receive has executed. So if you click step over, then examine the variables view, you'll find that the input variable has been set. And before that, it's actually still not set. So Joseph, we move to slide 17, please. Like I mentioned, you can step through the program. Here we have a close-up view of the debug view in WID. And there's the yellow curved arrow means step over. And here I'm hovering over it so you can see the hover text. And you click here to step over a node in your program. You can also hit F6. On the right-hand side of the slide, you can see where I've stepped over twice to step over to the next node. You can also see in the debug view that it displays the thread that is suspended, and it displays a stack frame which describes business process component 1.etl so that we know where we've stopped. And when you select that stack frame, that causes the variables view to be refreshed with the contents of the variables that are active in this node assigned price. So if you select other parts of the debug view, then the variables view will change to match that. So if you have two processes stopped, or if you have the thread selected without one of the stack frames selected, then the variables view will reflect what is selected in the debug view. So Joseph, can we move to slide 18, please? When you select the stack frame, then the variables will appear in the variables view. You can also see that an interface partner that I've called Float Interface Partner in this BPEL program also appears in the variables view. So if you click on the plus next to the interface partner, then it shows various details about that interface partner. And in this case, I've selected a variable called input 1, and it displays that there's a field called there's a value, and I've typed some input data. Displaying some input data in the test client, and that's the data that appears as the input 1 variable. Joseph, can we move to slide 19, please? In this case, I've set a breakpoint in a mediation, and when execution pauses, then we have a number of variables that appear in the variables view. In a mediation, you can examine the message context, headers for the message that was received, and the body. In this case, I've expanded the body, and you can see that the operation is called operation 1, and it has one variable called input 1. And input 1 is of type customer data, I think. And you can see that there's a bunch of information about some customer with name and address and so on. And so you can then verify when you've stopped in a mediation the contents of the body that was sent in the message. Lisa, can we move to slide 20, please? When you stop in a Java component, you have the usual Java variable called this. And in my case, the method that I created, there was an input argument called input 1. Again, it's a type customer VO, and so it has all the name and address information that was passed in the component that calls the Java component. You'll also notice in the upper right of the variable view, there's a series of buttons in the upper right, and one of them is sort of lit up in this foil. The fifth one from the right, and it's called Show Logical Structure. This button is selected by default in WID, and it's what causes the variable input 1 to be displayed with name and the value and the address 1 and the value and so on. If you click on this button, then you can examine the actual fields in the dynamic business object info, which the proper type for input 1. There's a lot of data that is in a dynamic business object, and it's quite difficult to parse. And that's why you want to select this button so that you can see the logical structure and just look at the names of your fields and the values. Joseph, can we move to slide 21, please? Now I'd like to talk about how to change the data in your variable. It's pretty straightforward, and it works the same way as in a Java program. You simply right-click on the variable that you want to change, and in the context menu, there's the option to change the value. When you click on that, a dialog pops up that allows you to set the value. Here you can type in a string that will be interpreted by the debugger and converted into the data type for the field that you selected. So you can enter a new value into this dialog and select and click on OK to have that value sent to the server. This can be useful if one of your interface partners has returned, an invalid result or a result that you're not happy with and you want to change it. So you can use this feature to test what you really want to test and not have to go back and change the component, which could take a lot of time. So you could use this to increase your productivity so that you can focus on the component that you're currently debugging and test it properly before you have to go back and fix your partner to return the data that you're expecting. And like I mentioned before, you can also use this feature to change the data, even if the message from your interface partner is correct. You can change it to some erroneous value if you want to test your error handling, or you can change it to some other value, like change a silver customer to a gold customer or something, so that you can test an alternate path in your application. So this can save you time not having to create a whole new test case just to test your silver partners and your gold partners and so on. Joseph, can we move to slide 22, please? Another useful feature of the breakpoints is the ability to disable them. You can do this in the breakpoints view, which is next to the variables view, using those checkboxes that appear next to the breakpoint. Here you can see that I've clicked on the checkbox so it's unchecked on the second breakpoint in this display. When you do that, the breakpoint icon turns gray. It also turns gray in the editor. You can see that on the right-hand side of this foil so that it's obvious that the breakpoint has been disabled. When you run your program, of course, the program won't stop at one of these disabled breakpoints. So this can be useful if you've set a bunch of breakpoints as you are testing your application, but you want to focus on a certain area. You may want to disable some of the breakpoints you're not using, but you still might want to get back to that area later, so you don't want to remove the breakpoint. So you disable the breakpoints you're not using and focus on debugging the area you want to debug, and then you can go back and re-enable them later. You can also disable the breakpoint using the context menu in the editor, using the debug menu that I mentioned earlier. Joseph, can we move to slide 23, please? So, in summary, you can use the component test client to create emulators automatically when you want to test a single component, or you can create some emulators using the test client UI so that you can choose what you want to test and choose what you want to emulate. Breakpoints are useful so that you can examine your program as it runs on the server, and this can be a lot faster than adding logging information and running your program and trying to figure out what's happening just from the log. And I also mentioned that you can use the variable modification feature so that you can modify your variable and test various paths through the server. Joseph, can we go to slide 24, please? These are some additional resources that you may find helpful. This concludes our presentation. I'd now like to pass control back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Paul, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Julie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have no further questions.
Thank you, Julie. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.